No, zoning and planning. All right, why don't we get started?
Well, you've got something on the agenda for that.
Yeah. All right, this is Monday, January the 9th. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of finance. It is also the first finance meeting of the new term. First of all, I want to say welcome to the veterans, okay, and an extra special welcome to the rookies, all right? And I'll just say one thing, rookies. I already talked to Cheryl about it. Alderman Blaze, I'm not worried about you in the least. You follow the lead of the veterans. You follow the lead of the veterans as to the appropriate amount of time to speak on an item. Anyway, I'm only kidding. You can say anything you want. You can talk as long as you want.
Trick Lenny's eyes.
Okay, the first item on the agenda, we'll do that. I do want to go over the Newton North information. We'll do that at the end of our regular business, okay? So the first item is 380-11. His Honor the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend the sum of $485,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding masonry repairs at various schools. Now, since the Public Facilities Committee meeting, it's my understanding that in looking into some additional information on design and so forth, there were some questions that were raised about some masonry funds or repairs that had been approved approximately a year ago. Okay? So, and this Alderman Salvucci and our esteemed committee clerk, Shauna, unearth this information. So I just think it's important that people know where this whole project stands. So maybe you should start by refreshing everybody as far as what was voted on last January, what's been spent, and what you intend to, where you intend to go from here.
Certainly. There are some sheets in the center here, and I'll pass on pass around the ones that I have as well. This is just a brief accounting for, I think, is that what you have? Okay, good. This is just a brief accounting for docket item 311-10, masonry expenditures to date. This is for the Bigelow Ward, Underwood, and Ed Center. At that point, when we passed that, it was $450,000 that was approved. This was for predominantly the Ward School. We anticipated approximately $250,000 worth of masonry work that was required as the phase one of that project. And then the remainder of the funds split out between the other schools. At that point, once that was passed, we entered into an agreement with one of our on-call architects. They brought in engineers. They reviewed the schools in question, came up with some immediate recommendations, one of which was the Bigelow School. There were some structural issues over there that they felt needed to be addressed sooner rather than later. Hence, if you notice that we've expended $70,090.30.
Such as, Mr. Cronin, feel free to jump in at any time.
On the corner of Vernon and, I always get this wrong,
visualize it.
Vernon, on the corner closest to...
In Waverly. Vernon, no, not Waverly.
Vernon and Park.
Vernon and Park.
Yeah, if you look at this, a little bit of an overhang, there was a fissure crack going straight up the face of the building. So we asked Public Buildings to take a look at that, and they had the mason come out and found out that there was some steel that was incorrectly tied in when they did the construction work. 1996, 1994. So, in any event, the mason went in and fixed whatever the damage was and sealed that crack up.
That was done when?
This summer.
This past summer.
One of the things that's challenging when it comes to masonry work is when you look at something like that, it's difficult to tell whether or not it is cosmetic, meaning just the bricks have slid down and cracked, or if there is really an underlying structural issue. You can't really tell until you do a little exploratory work. So that's what we determined, and that's the reason the architect asked us to move forward right away.
What did he say caused the crack?
It was step cracking that resulted in settling because it wasn't tied in to the structure itself. So
they had no wall ties? years ago they used to use it for a shoe block.
Yeah.
To tie the outside wall to the inside. They hadn't, it didn't do it.
Hence the reason they have to go in, they removed the courses of brick, and then they actually tied it back in, rebar right in.
What did they have for backup wall? Block?
I didn't see it open. Yeah. They had it shrouded for the entire time they were in there. With, you know, did not have to.
Nothing to tie it into?
I have no idea what they tied it to. We didn't get to go inside the working area.
They tied back into the structure of the building.
You got a row of brick, and you got a backup. It's either a block or it's a chip or something. But they got you just don't have a wall of brick.
Right. No, I understand.
So was it block or drywall? What was it?
It was the block building, but they went block. All the way back in.
All right. So this was done in the summer.
When they pinned it.
And I was just curious as to how they tied it in.
And this was so basically that was about an $80,000 job.
Yeah,
okay. All right, so go ahead. Keep going.
Okay.
I interrupted you there.
They also identified approximately because that was designed as well. They identified approximately $60,000 worth of work at the Ward School that needed to be addressed immediately, that they didn't think should wait until the entire package was put together, specifically the stairs around the Ward School. Because they were an egress in the condition that they were in, they felt that they needed to be addressed pretty quickly. In addition to some ceiling around the main stairs when you enter the building, because there was water getting into the basement. So they addressed that. Those were the first two things that they identified as needing to be addressed immediately. At that point, they moved into the actual scope determination. I brought the design so far with me. I don't know if anybody wants to see that. This is specifically for the Ward School. As they got into this, they realized very quickly that it was, as we suspected, quite a bit of work, more than, and hence the reason that we phased the project. We knew it was going to be big, and they confirmed that fact. They completed their design, I believe the date on that is in August. We, at that point, identified that it did not make sense to try to proceed with the project in August because we wanted to take advantage of a full summer to try to get the majority of the construction completed while school was out, specifically because of the site constraints over there at the Ward School, make setting up scaffolding fairly difficult.
Okay, but as far as the board order 311-10, which we passed about a year ago, there's still $295,000 that is left in that account.
That is correct.
Okay.
And the intent for those funds is to apply towards the masonry work at the Ward School.
But then you all, in the new request that's in front of us, there's also money in there for Ward, correct?
That is correct. So initially what it was going to be two-phase projects. In speaking with the architects, for two reasons. One, we wanted to take advantage of the summer, a full summer to get the work done. And two, they felt that the economy of scale would be better if we bid both phases out together.
Okay. So Ward is... is going to cost us about how much money?
When it's all said and done, we anticipate approximately for these two phases $500,000 worth of masonry work.
Okay, questions? Good show.
Well, this, obviously we didn't have this in public facilities, this information. That's just the Ward School, but that's going to be $500,000. So we have $250,000 plus $177,000.
Plus the $84,000.
Plus the $84,000. So that's, somebody have a calculator?
Yeah. It's $512,000.
Okay. So with Bigelow and the Ed Center, are we also going to... use this money to offset that? Or
yes.
Or are those projects bigger too?
Underwood in the Ed Center? Bigelow was designed.
Okay.
So that's kind of a separate path. But
Underwood is on the new DACA.
Actually, it is.
Oh, where is it? Oh, it's down here. Okay.
Okay,
there's no description. It's just design, right?
So the Ed Center is going to be more than what we were given, or what we docketed for in 311-10, which was $53,550. We anticipate that it's going to be somewhere right around the six-figure mark to address both of the masonry issues over at the Ed Center. So the intent is to utilize the remainder, or the additional funds requested in the second phase work to complete that project, well, to fully fund it so we can put it out to bid.
But you were just asking for design, or just thought you were asking for both?
Yes.
Okay, so that's $1 million in 2 years. And that's the priority according to the CIP?
It's coming right off the age of MAGE analysis from 2007 and then reconfirmed this past year. So this is masonry work.
Okay.
It's way past due.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
When we were, when we had asked about additional money needed, I heard it was in the CIP for next year, but do we not need to have it in the CIP for next year now?
For which specifically?
Was it?
I think it was for Bowen, because we had design for Bowen and Bigelow
right.
in this year with construction funds next year. That still needs to be there.
Still needs to be there, even though there's extra money for Underwood here.
I mean, certainly, in the event that there is remaining funds within the masonry line item, we would continue to tackle, so especially Bowen, because if Bowen does determine to be what we think it is, and that is relatively minor, we would certainly proceed with the repairs on that one. The Bigelow stairs, we know, is going to be a larger
right.
number. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, thank you.
Ruthann?
Help me out a little bit. So in January 2011, number 311-10 was passed. There were four projects that were close to $500,000. We only did one of those projects.
Yes.
Essentially, plus part of a second one.
That's correct.
Tell me, but at the same time, as Mike is saying, there's a lot of masonry work that's way past due.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit why that those projects didn't get done in 2011.
Certainly. It had to do with capacity within our department. As I'm sure many people are aware, we've gone through the process of hiring additional project managers over the summer because we know that the number of projects we had at that point was more than what we could handle. We didn't want to start a project till we could commit resources to really move on that.
Looking ahead to 2012, we've got to finish up our 2011 projects plus the additional 2012 projects. Do we have the capacity now to do both years' projects in the 2012? Or is the 2012 money that we're voting on tonight, when do you expect to complete these projects?
We're comfortable that we'll complete these in this year.
Along with the 2011,
because the remaining projects in 2011, in this case, kind of dovetail with the 2012 work. So it not only will it make sense economically to do these projects together, but it will also make sense from a management perspective to be able to utilize the resources we have.
And should we expect additional masonry repairs either at these buildings or other buildings in 2013 and 2014 and 2015?
Yes, we should.
Just keep rolling.
I think in I spoke to this in the facilities meeting. As part of HMFH's study, as well as the building assessment on the city side, our department, and I think the school department as well, is taking a slightly different approach in how we prioritize our work, meaning that we are going to focus on building envelope. We've done a lot of work within the buildings. If your envelope isn't tight, you can't protect those assets that you've put money into within the building. Ward is a prime example of that. There's water infiltration throughout the building, hence the reason that masonry, and to the extent that we're presenting it, has become a top priority for the school department as well as for the public buildings department.
And last question, if I may, just to get the big picture, for the four items that we're looking at tonight, these all add up to the, this is the charter maintenance? What is this?
This is the school department share of the $3.5 million.
So they're 1.75.
That's my understanding.
Which in theory we've already psychologically approved
yes.
the big number, and now we're just apportioning it and approving
right.
The specific uses.
Though that is, my understanding is that is supposed to change starting this next year. How, you know, that we're not just going to go 1.75, 1.75.
Right.
It's going to be a joint CIP plan. So it, the administration, from what I hear, is planning on doing it differently.
Yep.
But you're right. This is the money we have psychologically committed for each of the past several years.
Right. Thank you.
Just one thing on what Ruth answered. Will Ward at least be done?
Ward will be done from a perspective of water infiltration. Not all of the masonry will have been done over, but we are going to reassess at that point. It may not require additional work. That is our goal with the first two phases. I think what's important to realize at that point is that it's got to stack up against other projects. So until we can get a determination of what, and we have a rough idea as to what this money will get us to, but until we've identified really where we're at after the second phase, we can't really compare that to other capital projects and really prioritize that.
Is this mainly repointing kind of work?
It's mainly repointing. There's definitely, like, the main entryway. If you look at the stairs, the big concrete slabs, we got to reset those because we're getting water in there big time, and that's where the air intake is for the boiler room. So you got water pouring in the boiler room, which is where you have a lot of money sitting, so it's kind of this domino effect. So you got quite a bit there, and then also around the windows is another big piece of this.
So that's a three-phase architectural conceptual plan. So what we want to do is put the first two phases out with a third as an alternate to see if we can get all three with one shot, and then have, in essence, three for two. So part of the theory was to have the architect said, if you put it all out, you may get some extra bang for the buck. Can it all be done over a summer? I'm a little skeptical, but I know that we can also try to work around it. We can save as much of the parking lot area as we can. That's really our only constraint over there. There's no space.
John?
Do we have any internal in the City of Newton masonry services?
We do. We have a masonry service contract, which is what we utilize to address the immediate concerns that we had. However, there's limitations to that contract, not only in contract value, but also it is the intent that we, whenever possible, bid this work out so we get the best prices.
So in other words, so everything is external with it
all. Oh, as far as these projects,
yeah. Certainly. Yeah. So in other words, so we have no internal resources within this, any city services, because with it, a while back when I was dealing with public buildings in the Brighamhouse, and you know it's a wood shingle building, and I kept hearing public buildings, all we do is brick and mortar. So it's like, you know, is there any, because all of our work is done in brick and mortar, is there any, this is a longer term, is there any to have some sort of masonry services with them?
There are masons available within the city, but not for vertical construction for the most part. I know your question is, should we be getting masons on staff?
Because it's all our buildings, you know, are brick and mortar.
Yes, no, I understand that. I think part of the problem that we have when we look at services like that is it's not just having the labor available, it's equipping the labor. There's also a certain amount of liability you take on when you deal with structural issues. If this were strictly, if our only need was repointing, we could probably do that. We could probably, you know, get some masons on board and systematically make our way through the building. But when you get into situations where, like at the Bigelow School, where it looks like it could be either a cosmetic fracture or it could be a structural issue, that's where you want to make sure that you have licensed, insured contractors doing the work so that you can hold them accountable and so that it's them on the line.
Okay.
Maureen wanted to comment.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We actually had a mason that was part of the buildings department who retired at the end of October, I think it was. And what we did was we took that position, and instead of hiring a new mason, we actually hired a new HVAC technician. Because so that we now have a team of three HVAC technicians, we think that we are getting much more bang for our buck out of having three HVAC techs, because as Josh was alluding to, any of these masonry projects, you really need a team working on these. So one mason wasn't really going to get us what we needed. So we actually made the decision not to replace that person with a mason, and we got an HVAC tech.
Okay. Who's our on-call company?
Caruso McGovern.
Where are they from?
St.
Okay. Other questions? Alderman Linsky.
Yeah, well, I guess I want to follow up a little bit on Ruthann's question. Because when you said that in theory this is the 1.75 being spent down, but we're going to do it one-to-one, well, differently and not carve off the 3.5 like on a 50-50 basis and look at it more holistically. But this is all, these items are all for bond and indebtedness. So is this in that amount, this is the debt service that we're kind of tagging on to, or I'm trying to understand. It sounds, my guess is, I suspect that the last 1.75 million for the prior fiscal year that ended last year was all spent, right? And now we're in this next pile of money.
Well, it hasn't all been spent because we can see right here that there's 295 that was not spent.
Right.
So we know at least this wasn't spent, and this money was bonded, right? And was part of the 1.75 last year. So technically, it all hasn't been spent. Last year's money hasn't been spent.
Last year being, we're talking about fiscal year.
11.
And the other question I just want to understand, because you were talking about capacity, Josh, and why, again, in response to the question, we're still at this point. And we were just talking about the change from masonry to HVAC, which I think also makes sense, because particularly with the new systems coming in, I think we've recognized the need for greater energy. I don't know how those three are, how they deployed. Are they, we got a new high school person, I know, at North. Are they deployed?
This was within, yeah, within our craftsmen, so they respond to, you know, maintenance requests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the project management, though, you indicated we needed more of that. So what are we doing? Are we doing project management by individual project here, or are we looking to hire from across, because we've got multiple jobs, not really just masonry, but also the other items that we're going to be discussing too. Are these folks, are these going to be managing the totality of these projects?
We have brought on, this past year, you may remember, we have Alex and Maje. We have the project manager and then the sustainability project manager. The sustainability project manager was to replace David Tanzini, who wasn't necessarily focused on capital projects as much as he was operations, whereas Maje is capable of making a bowl, meaning that he can handle operations, but he's also going to manage capital projects.
Well, I've seen he's appeared.
Yes.
Times that, you know, that means, the other projects we've been doing. But you're talking about something in addition.
No. I'm saying that was over the summer, and Alderman Fuller's question was, why was the delay from last year? And the delay was because we didn't have them on.
Okay. So putting him on has answered that.
Yes. That has increased our capacity.
We don't need any additional project
management. Okay,
and Alex, yeah.
Yeah. You're not planning on hiring someone in another Alex, for instance, right? There's not. You are.
We may. We're certainly evaluating the capacity of the two individuals that we've hired, and as we're moving through, and as you know, we have a huge slate of projects that we really want to start moving on. We've been looking at this from two different perspectives. One of either adding a surcharge, if you will, onto the different projects that we'll be bringing before you, say 3% for project management, and hiring project managers that way, or actually just putting somebody in the FY13 budget as a project manager, because the person really would be on staff. I think we're leaning more toward actually putting somebody in the budget rather than adding an amount to our projects, but we're definitely looking at making sure that we have the resources so that we can manage all these projects effectively.
Okay, any other questions? Yes. Okay, there's been a motion to approve. Is there any further discussion or questions?
I just have one more quick one. Okay, so a year ago, the estimates were for this amount of money. But since we haven't spent it, if we go up to bid now, would it be more?
These actually, we had the architect, which did their work in August, are basing, that's what their numbers are based on. So these were estimates based on what we thought beforehand. So that's the most up-to-date. So we feel comfortable that we're going to be able to get done what we need to get done.
Thank you, that's it.
Okay, it's been motion's been made. All those in favor? All right, looks to be unanimous. Okay, next item is 379-11 is honor the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend the sum of $450,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding mechanical upgrades at various schools. And before we get into this, and before I forget to ask, it would be helpful for us to know when these items we expect to have them bonded and the term of the bonds. So, but why don't we get into this, the substance of this one first.
Okay. All right, so before you is two items, the boiler replacement at the Mason Rice School and the Lincoln Elliott School. I think everybody's got the backup here. They're both well beyond useful life. They both currently function, but this is about reliability as well as operational efficiency. So we have a breakdown here. It's, you'll notice that there's a difference between the asbestos abatement numbers. The Mason Rice School was previously abated. However, when you go to actually take the boiler apart, there's a potential for asbestos in the rope in between the sections, as well as potential for a small amount of asbestos in the base. That's the reason that there's a difference there. And then boiler, the cost of the boiler is slightly different based on sizing of the boiler for each one of the schools. And then that has a trickle-down effect on the rest of the subsystems based on boiler room size, the amount of piping, that kind of stuff. That's pretty much it. Pretty straightforward. The prices are based on, we've done boilers pretty much every year, so we have a pretty good handle on what prices are going to be.
Do you know about what size the boilers would be at these schools?
Section count or BTU rating?
BTU.
You're looking at about 2.5, 3 million BTU at least.
Right.
That's
about
an 8-year-old boiler or something?
You want the old?
No, I'm in the process. Normally, I just realized I didn't consult with you because I'm in the process of having a Lochinvar installed at the house. It's a little smaller than that. And normally I check with you on those things, but anyway, hopefully that's a good
boiler.
It's a good boiler. But it's a little smaller than 2.5 million BTUs.
Yes.
Questions?
Yours can hang on the wall. Don't.
Mine hangs on the wall. I just caught it today. I'm all excited. There it is. First guy in the neighborhood with a Lochinvar, I think. Questions? Yes.
That's the same as we're putting in the conversion type.
I've already reached out to the gas company. They're going out to do their engineering work. Barring them coming back and saying that it's going to cost millions of dollars, we would certainly go for gas install and then dual fuel burner.
Yes.
Are there any other items from last year that we approved and were bonded and haven't been expended?
The boiler projects are about 2 or 3 weeks from being complete from last year, so they're just wrapping up.
Remembered boilers?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
John?
So on the dual fuels, but it works in that gas and oil is in, and based upon the price, we switch over each direction. And is it easy to switch over?
It's very easy to switch over. I can tell you that consistently gas has been significantly less than the oil, so there hasn't been we had that capacity, not only from cost, but also from, you know, if for whatever reason there was an interruption to the gas service, it allows us to maintain more.
So all new boilers, we're adding it for gas as well, for the ones that don't have gas.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, I think we have 4 schools left. These are 2 of them, and then we'll have dual fuel capability at all schools. There's a few schools that already had just gas, and it's just gas. We're not installing oil tanks. We don't need those.
Yep.
So you're saying that's one of the questions we always ask. There's 4 schools left, or there will be 2 schools?
After this, there will be 2 schools left that don't have gas.
But as far as needing new boilers, where are we? We always ask you this. Where are we?
I think we have 6 schools left that we have both boilers are at that point, meaning that they're beyond their useful life. But, you know, one of them kind of counts and doesn't. Over at FAA, you got a couple of Cleaver Brooks that are 25 years old, 30 years old, but they're in remarkably good condition, and I don't see us having to go after those anytime soon. Cleaver Brooks are very expensive to install, but they last a long, long time.
So are we going to get to a point where we wrap these five or six schools up and then have a break, or are we going to have to start back again on another cycle like playgrounds?
I think what we're going to end up doing is we're doing two boilers a year. At some point, we're going to cut back. Once we get up to where we need to, we can go to one boiler a year, and then those funds can be allocated in other areas of need.
Okay. Ruth Ann?
This relates to the question Lenny asked. So in this day and age, when you put in a new boiler, what's the estimated life?
Estimated life is 20 to 25 years with a good maintenance program. They're not going to put their name on anything longer than that, but they can last quite a bit longer.
Which may lead to the, I don't know if you want to address it now, how long are we bonding for and that type of thing?
First of all, these will be sold in the spring. The board will be sold as part of the spring bond sale. We will bond them for whatever length of time either bond council or Dave Wilkinson tells us to. When I put together the financial plan, for the $3.5 million, I assumed that they would be 15-year bonds as a total, so that some things will be 20-year bonds, some will be 10-year bonds, but just as a projection for the next 5 years, I did everything as 15-year bonds. So whatever is most appropriate for them, that's what they will be. And the only other comment I wanted to make on the gas versus oil, we have just locked in as of November 1st for the next 4 years our natural gas prices, and we had a 40% reduction over what we were paying before. So my expectation would be for the next 4 years we won't see oil being less expensive than our natural gas, but at least we do have that option if the oil market drops.
It would have to get into like $1.60, $1.70 a gallon.
Yeah, it would really have to get in that.
I don't see it happening.
So by going dual fuel, though, we also lose a couple percentage points of efficiency. We have flexibility, but we lose efficiency because we have not the jets that aren't required for just gas.
Okay.
So, you know, we're less efficient for running dual fuel.
How efficient are they, the new ones?
It all depends on the burner, the boiler, or the total system.
Total system.
The total system on these boilers, because this is a steam system, is normally 87 to 89% efficient. Hot water systems, you get into the 90 to 91% range. If you can go with a condensing type boiler, you get into the 95 to 96% range. Lab conditions, you'll get right up to 98%, but you'll never reach that in the field.
I'm just curious, what assumption, you use 15 years, what do you use for an interest rate for your assumption?
4%.
Which is certainly high certainly right now.
That's high. We would expect to be selling our bonds for much less than that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Question, because I've been looking at my house about whether to go to natural gas, and I've had three different plumbers in there looking at it, and I get three different answers as to whether you should get a combined oil and gas one that you can do both for a house.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems here you say it actually works well, but is that because the boiler is so big, or is it just you can do that in the house as well?
It allows us to hedge. Do you have an oil tank?
Yes.
If you have an oil tank, then it would probably be a good idea to have both because your overall cost
is it in the ground or in the house?
In the house. But I'm saying is they were saying that you can't get a boiler that works well for both oil and gas.
You can.
Okay, now I'm getting a fourth answer.
Yeah, but you're gonna lose but you're gonna lose efficiency.
Yeah, I can see losing a little efficiency, but you said you can actually get them that so you can use gas or oil.
Yeah, and when we're talking efficiency, it's greater when you talk about it on a macro perspective, like a school. But when you're talking a house, you're talking, you know, a few dollars a year. It's not a profound impact.
Yeah, mine's 110,000 BTUs, if it's 96% or higher, you get a $1,500 rebate. If it's 95.9, you get a $1,000 rebate.
Yeah.
All right.
You may have done this at some point in time, but because it seems like periodically we are talking about boilers, incessantly. Have you given us kind of a chart of where we are with all the boilers system wide?
Yep. I did that a couple of years ago.
Maybe
we
can
send that out again.
Can you do that?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yep.
The last thing, given the other conversation, we're just really talking about it's the burn. It's the dual, right? I mean,
the
boiler. Right. It has nothing to do with what fuel you're using. It's what the burner mechanism is designed to break things into beads or whatever. So it's just how it's doing it for different.
Exactly.
All right, any other questions? Yes, John?
What are the two schools that don't, that only get water only?
Pierce and Bowen.
All right, is there a motion? Motion made to approve. Any other questions or discussion? Okay, all those in favor? All right, that's unanimous. 378-11 is honor the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend the sum of $315,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding the emergency generator upgrades at various schools.
Okay, so right off the bat, I just want to point out, and we talked about this in the facilities, but I want to stress it here as well. Of the $315,000, $150,000 is additional funding required to complete the generator replacement at the Education Center, as indicated by the backup provided in the cost estimate by REK Engineering. The original appropriation was $202,125. The additional $150,000 will bring us up to $352,125. With the cost estimate right around there at $350,000, that's including design. The reason for the increased cost is twofold. One is, as we perform these life safety improvements at buildings that require true emergency backup power, we're having to address life safety needs within the building as well. Additionally, the code is now requiring that emergency generators be housed in their own enclosure. What this means is that you can't, in many cases, we have emergency generators in our mechanical rooms. They can't just be in a mechanical room. It has to be in its own enclosure. So this means that either you have to build a room within the building that's fire-rated and has all the support systems, or you relocate the emergency generator to outside the building. There's pluses and minuses to both, but both mean additional cost. Additionally, at the Education Center, the emergency generator was initially set up long before it had its current need and its current capacity. At this point, with the Education Center being the central hub for communications for the school department, the server room has, of course, increased exponentially in size and demand. It also has a larger cooling system that maintains temperature within that space and, believe it or not, runs 100% right through the winter. It doesn't matter that it's cold outside. So in order to back all that up, not only does it increase the generator size, but it increases the amount of work that we have to do to go into the building and tie all those systems back into the emergency panel, which triggers the fact that the emergency panel has got to be enlarged because you have more capacity. So the silver lining to this is, as part of the building assessment and meeting with the school department, what we've identified is that not all of our locations require this level of backup power. So we are focusing and centralizing our emergency power at buildings that require public safety buildings, city hall, shelters, and the education center. But as you see in the next two items, we're decreasing the amount of money required to do emergency backup or backup power at other locations. For elementary schools that aren't shelters, the way the industry is going is exit signs, battery backup throughout the building. We met with ISD and fire, and everybody involved felt that this was not only the way that the industry is going, but the best way, the most sustainable way for us to go. This doesn't mean that we can eliminate emergency or generators altogether, but we're eliminating emergency generators, which the big difference here is the faster you're required. In order to meet an emergency generator requirement, it has to transfer full load within 10 seconds. In order to do so, you have to have a generator that starts up extremely fast and a transfer switch that transfers very quickly. Both of those mean a lot of money. By eliminating that need, all you're doing really is you're backing up heat and some other small loads. Where you have battery backup, lights go out, battery backup comes on, emergency lights come on, your exit signs are lit. From a life safety standpoint, you're fine. The only thing you're in trouble on would be that you don't have any heat. You could these buildings can go a half hour, an hour without heat, without any issues, but you don't need that. A couple minutes and your cost of your transfer switch and your generator drops exponentially. So that's the direction we're heading. So although the Ed Center generator cost is going up, all the other schools are going to be coming down
not only does that help us from a capital standpoint, but from a maintenance standpoint as well. Maintaining smaller generators is much more economical. It's also because, just by nature, not being an emergency generator, we're not having to pay emergency rates when something goes down. We can just schedule a service company to come out.
Okay, Alderman Salvucci. Are these all natural gas?
Most of them are natural gas. We do have some diesel generators out there. Any place that natural gas is available, we would use natural gas.
Alderman Secoy.
I know you talked about this, about the maintenance program. You're going to instill in these people that they are definitely going to follow through.
We've already started, actually. We're about halfway through. We've already worked with our electrical contractor to start generator service on all of our generators. This will be an annual preventative maintenance that's performed. The first go-around is a little more than that, obviously, because we're trying to play catch-up. I think we have, as of today, we finished two more buildings. I think we have 13 buildings coming. So we're rolling right through.
Do you have a time frame of how long you go between tests?
Oh, yeah. Well, we met with the fire department, and it's kind of, there's the alarm system that needs to be tested. There's the emergency generator that needs to be ran. What we're doing is we're servicing all the generators, and then as part of that, the contractor is developing a proposal, which is relatively small, to install software and hardware that will automatically test the generators, which does two things. One, it will tell us that that the generator is functioning, but also the real cost in ignoring maintenance on emergency generators is that when it sits stagnant like that, battery dies, your shaft can become bowed, your belts dry out, all that kind of stuff. The oil just sits there. It's like a car. You never drive the thing, it's going to fall apart on you. So this thing gets driven, 45 minutes an hour once a week. You don't have the same issues that you have.
I would just ask you to do this only from personal experience. Brand new police station I worked in.
Yep.
6 years ago, brand new backup system, all 9 years. The computer system says it was being tested. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. I was standing there one Sunday when they said, this is the time it goes off. I'm standing there. And the only reason I did is because two Sundays in a row I worked at the same time and I didn't hear the thing go off, so I just asked the question, when is it supposed to go up? Sunday, 9:05 a.m. It's right here in the printout. Well, at 9:05, I'm standing there. 9:15, I'm standing there. Finally, I called in. It's not going off.
Yeah.
Needless to say, they went and looked at the printout afterwards. It said it was being tested and tested fine.
Yeah.
So I would hope that someone's going to be overlooking that. Maybe not be there every time, but just maybe every other time to make sure.
Yeah, the trick is, and what I did to combat that is that whenever they do their service, they write down the run hours, and that'll tell you.
Beautiful.
So that eliminates the computer failure.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yes.
I'll move approval.
Okay. Motion's been made. Any other questions or comments? Okay, all those in favor? All right, that one's unanimous. All right, last item is 377-11. It's honor the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and expend the sum of $200,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding electrical upgrades in various schools.
Okay. This is a capital project that stems directly from the HMFA report. As was the case in the building assessment when they looked at the city buildings, HMFA identified the need to address some outdated electrical equipment in the buildings. The one thing I want to stress is this is not a change-out for the sake of change-out. Conduit lasts a long time. Just because it's old doesn't mean that it's bad. Wire runs the same thing. As long as it's not knobbing too and you've got good wires, there's no sense in going out and replacing it. What this does mean is that we're addressing key junction points, whether it be breaker panels or junction boxes, anywhere where there's water infiltration around the electrical equipment that can reduce the life and potentially create an unsafe condition. We're looking to address all of those. So specifically right at the top of the Countryside School was, I'm sure many people are aware, there's water issues in that building. One of the problems that we have is where the generator conduit enters the building, it's below grade, and we have water that comes in around the panel there. It's a new panel, so it's watertight. We're not having an electrical safety issue, but it creates a condition in which the panel can prematurely fail. I don't mean in an electrical way, I mean that it can rust, which just means you got to replace it that much sooner. Same thing, you go into the boiler room, there's a bunch of sub-panels on the far right where we're getting some water that's coming in. It's a relatively inexpensive fix on the water, but compounding that is that the panels are also beyond useful life. In many of these schools, the other issue that we have is that these breaker panels were installed many, many years ago, and when they installed them, they split the loads based on current demand back then. As everyone knows, technology has increasing demand on electrical consumption in the schools. In addition, we have more air conditioning than we have in the past. In some cases, it might just be a window unit, but because of this, you have load imbalance in these panels, meaning that you might have 80% of your load on 20% of the breakers. You don't want that. You want the load evenly shared throughout those breakers. It minimizes breaker trips and also allows for increased capacity. Specifically, at the Franklin School, we're having issues where breakers are tripping. This could be, at the Franklin School, we're looking at the potential to have a service upgrade. Some of these schools may require that, where we're just tapped. We're at the point where, you know, we need a little more juice for the building. And as such, it might require a breaker or a panel replacement to support that. So.
Did you bring your
backup? Yeah, it was in the public. We saw
yeah, I know. I noticed the same thing. It didn't get into. It didn't get to finance.
Yeah, it should be.
No, it's not. It's not. At least it's not on the agenda.
Yeah.
No, that's all right. So what?
That's all
right. What's no? Unless do people want?
Love to just pass around them.
What is what? Why don't you just summarize the work that's going to be done and at which schools?
Okay, it's at the Countryside, Memorial Spaulding, and Franklin schools. Countryside is really about, as I was discussing, water infiltration and sealing those penetrations, replacing panels that are outdated, key junction boxes, anything that's corroded, that kind of stuff. And straight across the board, any kind of touch anything will be a load balance so that we're maximizing the expandable infrastructure within the electrical distribution system. That's the Countryside School. Memorial Spaulding, similar situation minus the water. It's just breaker panels, junction boxes that are beyond their useful life. You know, it's not an unsafe condition, but when you're talking about newer electrical equipment, it has better back or better safety mechanisms. You look at the old knife switches, some of those old panels are a little scary to operate. There's nothing electrically unsafe with them, but if you have to work in them, you can see the difference. Not to mention, your new boxes are all weather tight, so you don't get dust and stuff that gets in there, water, moisture. It just makes it a safer environment. The Franklin School, as I talked about, is where we're going to be looking most likely for a service upgrade. But until we can get in there and meter all those panels and determine, you know, what capacity we really have, it's going to be tough to make that determination. But that price is for the service upgrade and the panel increase or panel size increase.
Okay. Any questions?
Can I ask one? Just this is for Mike. Maybe it's Mike. I don't know. What's the next big project that you wished you could have done this year? If you had another $250,000 or $500,000, what would it have been?
McAnally is without question my most concerning HVAC building.
Thank you.
That one gives us the most headache.
That's just
heating the water on the steam. I'm talking about the distribution system to the rest of the building. We have, as you probably know, we have a series of cold calls in that building. That's the most chronic building where we have the most significant cold calls. We have wings of the building that just fills up the water instead of steam.
Now that you're mentioning that, because we just took a new boiler, don't we really have to do that to make the heat system work?
So that'd be
replace the boiler.
So that'd be the first step, and then in the out years we'll start to deal with pieces of the infrastructure.
If you replace the distribution system and you left 50-year-old boilers and it fails, it's not going
to... No, he's talking about...
I'm just suggesting that, you know, you look at to some extent, because you're not going to effectuate a lot on the boiler.
Unless it's the kind of thing where the boiler is flooding a lot and you ended up with water instead of steam.
It's not necessarily that. One of the issues that we have had, though, is the condensate pump set that goes along with that boiler has been failing. That does lead to backup of condensate into the steam lines, which can cause those issues. The unique challenge that's presented by Lincoln Elliott is that you have multiple renovations that have tried to interface different heating systems and distribution systems, whereas in many buildings you have one system. When you're trying to interface steam with water, it typically doesn't work real well. For whatever reason, many years ago, they like to do it.
Well,
yeah, tell me, bud.
I assume when we talked earlier that this is a steam boiler.
It is a steam boiler.
Well, now, I wonder whether, given the state of the distribution system, I wonder whether we might want to rethink that.
Well, to be specific on the distribution system, the things that need to be done is not necessarily, it's not the piping per se. Your steam trap should be done, meaning that the internals should be replaced. But specifically, what gives us the most trouble are the univents. That's independent of the boiler, whether it's steam or hot water. I'll be honest with you, I would prefer to have hot water. I would love to do a hot water conversion in all of our steam buildings. But it's many, many, many millions of dollars to do that. You have to, it's like a gut. You've got to open up walls and floors and ceilings, and it's huge. But that said, there's no, the steam system is good. It's just more maintenance intensive. Once the boiler is replaced, then we can go out and start attacking the distribution system, not the piping, but your delivery points, whether it be univents or fan coils or whatever that might be.
Yes.
You said there are frequent calls to Lincoln Elliott because of this issue. How many calls? What's that costing? What percentage of our budget for calls is that?
So I couldn't give you a breakdown right now. Get that for you, but we hear from them. When it's the colder season, we hear from them more than any other building. And, that's a standard work order process. So Lincoln Elliott puts a work order in. The work order in goes to my office, and then we send it to the public buildings, and they address it with the outside contractor or in-house staff. If you look at the frequency, the size of the school and the number of calls, their percentage is higher than any other building.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, if we're spending a certain amount every year, it might be better to do this sooner than later.
Well, we're going to, but it starts with the boilers, and then you can see what kind of improvement that gets you, and then you got to decide because you're not going to change this over to a hot water system. I mean, it would be too expensive.
And the other thing is that your distribution system requires a lot more coordination. The boilers and handles, so you can do the boiler swap out while school's going on if you want to. But the distribution system, there's a lot. I mean, it's, you've got to
get summertime. But the reality on these boilers, correct me if I'm wrong, when are we doing them? But we're bonding them in the spring, we're probably going to be installing them in the summer, right?
That's correct in this case,
We have great success doing them during the school year as well. We have a regular practice.
I'm saying, in respect of this one school, we could look at something. I'm not...
Sure.
You're saying, in the sense, the cost may be prohibitive to get that part.
I understand what you're saying, but here's how I explain this. If when you're looking at operational risk management, and you look at the option right now, so you take two different paths. You can replace the boiler that is definitely well beyond useful life and has had multiple failures in the past, or you can replace the distribution system, which is causing operational issues. We can manage the operational issues. We can make repairs as needed to restore heat to locations that have inadequate heat. A boiler that's 50 years old, when you get that far beyond useful life, your thermal tolerances go down. A cold water introduction could snap that thing in half like a walnut shell. And then you're looking at an emergency appropriation, emergency procurement, and substantially more cost. So it's that balance of what the best path is to take. Certainly, we're going to lead right into it, and I think we all agree that we're going to lead right into the distribution system. It's just that when you're looking at weighing pros and cons, it tends to make more sense to deal with the big stuff.
So if I could paint the picture, when things fail in the classroom, when a univent fails, pop a coil, it freezes, there's water all over the floor, I could take that classroom and move the classroom. One classroom. The classroom on the inside of those is still functioning, is still teaching. And frankly, once we clean up the water in the room and shut off the fan, we could probably still teach class in that classroom, even without heat for a day or two, while they're out procuring another coil that somebody's going to come in and install. If we lose the boiler, that means I have no classrooms with heat. And I'm in big trouble because I don't have a backup system besides the second boiler. And one of those really cold days last week, we had single digits. We need two boilers to run in order to keep the building temperature up.
he won't support on just one. So we want to do the big dot first, and then we'll tackle the distribution system second.
Wasn't there talk a while ago of closing Lincoln?
Not in my time, yeah.
No.
I remember hearing it.
Not in 11 years.
There was a time when they said they were going to close it.
Well, there was... I understand, but I think that was quickly dismissed. They need the capacity.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Too. Right now, we have a capacity issue.
You're shot. I understand
we
that.
Have 25.
There was one time when they said they were going to close Lincoln Elliott. Right. That's what I understood anyway.
Yes.
I'll move approval.
Okay. Motion's been made. Any further discussion, questions? All right. All those in favor? All right. That is unanimous. Okay. All right, Mike, thank you.
Thank you.
I
appreciate
that
question. It is
a good
question.
All right, here's...
I think that's yours.
Okay, next item is just, there is a memo in your packet with some information on Newton North. I don't want us, this to be... I don't think this necessarily needs to be a long discussion, but I promised the previous committee an update on where things stood because it had been a while. I want to emphasize two dates to you. There is still work that is to be done in the spring, and the plan is that there will be another review to see where we stand in June, which will be in preparation for a report that we need to give to the state, which we anticipate giving in August, so that we can give the state a final accounting and then also settle up with the state as to how much we are borrowing from them on that low interest loan. And there is a possibility that we might actually give some of the money back because we didn't need it, okay? So, again, every time we talk about numbers, everybody on the team, okay, whether it be the project manager, the architects, the mayor's office, they get nervous about us jumping the gun. And I can certainly appreciate that. I've been up the same belief to this point, but I mean, this thing is pretty much completed. So, but again, I just want you to know there'll be another review of this in June, and David and others will be going to the state in August. Okay, so please keep that in mind. So, if you would go to the far right and count back 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 columns to where it reads the total amended budget. I would just like to start there. How we got there, feel free on your own time to review the history, okay? But we are talking about the board order that was approved by the Board of Aldermen under the construction manager at risk model, and it was $197,526,000 in change, okay? So that's the board order that we have always worked off of. The next column to the right tells you that to this point, we have paid bills totaling $190,400, and this is of all the nights to forget my cheaters, anyway.
$190 million,
yeah. $190,400,000 is at 08 or 68? 68. All right, so that's how, that is what we have paid to date for bills, okay? So, thank you. So now the next column are the encumbrances, which I guess the best way of describing it, though David could have described it better, this is money that we have obligated, okay, that we have entered into agreements to spend, okay? So that leaves you with an unobligated balance of $3,547,247.17. So in a sense, that tells you that, you know, that is money that we should expect to come in under budget. However, the next column, there are another 1 $525,000 of anticipated additional savings, okay? That's what we're expecting at this point. And the bulk of that money is obviously the construction contract with Demio. We expect that, even though our contract with them is for $164,325,000, we expect to save an additional $1,608,000. So at the end of the day, right now, our best projection is that the project will come in approximately $5 million under budget, okay? So I just want you to understand those, you know, different columns, okay? The other thing that there was in the memo, there was a memo from Art, and I... All right, as soon as I can get this new north thing, I'll be down. All right, thank you. Thanks, Amy. So in the memo from Art Cabral, I think the most important thing there is that I thought would be just helpful for you to understand is that included in that in those figures, what's covered is the you keep hearing about, you know, the springtime. And what's included in there are 40-foot, you know, that's the projection at least, poles and netting to try and deal with the foul ball issue down at the corner of Hull and Lowell. We've got to still tie in the cistern so that we can continue to hopefully, you know, feed the irrigation system with rainwater as opposed to using town water. The fence on Hull Street, I think that's actually been done. Okay, they put a fence up there to try and discourage sledding. The weather's done that pretty well so far. They're going to have to come back in and do some reworking of the fields, you know, the fields that are on the Lowell Avenue side. And there's some additional drainage work that needs to be done. And then there's a placeholder for unforeseen items. Now, it didn't get on there, but I can tell you that those items in total are $465,000. And of that $465,000, $200,000 is for unforeseen items. So I'm hopeful that that $5 million figure will actually grow a little bit. Okay? So those items that you see on Art's memo, again, those total $465,000. Okay, and so there could be some additional savings there, especially if we don't incur anything unforeseen. I mean, the $200,000 alone should be saved. Okay.
Was there $5 million in there, or a contingency or something?
There was what came to be known as the Board of Aldermen contingency was $5 million. Right now, there's $3 million in that account, because if you remember, when we got into the additional asbestos work and other hazardous materials that needed to be done, we had to transfer some money in, and that's why the Demio contract grew, because we had to transfer $2 million in to cover that. Okay?
And that came out of that $5 million.
And that came out of the $5 million, so that balance is down to $3 million. Questions?
Now, is this $5 billion of real dollars? Was this the money we did bond to borrow? Or, in other words, is this dollars coming back to the city, or is this less money to be at the paper
project?
Well, we borrowed the last part of the funding of this project, and just correct me if I make a misstatement, either one of you, was a $15 million low-interest loan from the state. We have borrowed 11 out of that 15 million, okay? So we don't expect to have to borrow that additional 4. And then, as I understand it, if there's additional savings, then we may actually turn back some of that money to the state, correct? Hold on, did that answer it?
Yes.
Hey, Stephen.
The contract was for 167.
Hold on a minute, let me get to Stephen and I'll turn it. Stephen.
Apart from what John raised, which was, you know, the residual amount of the contingency, which is still the great bulk of the $5 million, three of it is just our contingency. The other way of looking at this, Lenny, is that with the project savings of a little over $1.5 million, if you take that, where we get that 1.6 million comes from, is that we've encumbered still another $3.4 million. Right, that's David does so. In short, even though it's encumbered, a portion of that is really actually not going to be expended. That's what we're thinking, right? So that's where it's going to.
It's right.
That's where it's going to come back. And Lenny, in terms of the the scope revisions, the Walnut Street field is not money out for us, right? I know they have to come back
expenditures. It's not sources of money.
Okay, so this is going to be
fixing that front field.
We're going to have to.
That's not. Well, are we?
We're paid for, I mean, it's come out of the project to this point, and I believe that the additional drainage, that there's a small amount of money in there, because they have to come back in and do some more work. They got to do some more of that deep plugging.
Okay,
is included
so
in there.
My question was, that's still to be expended, so that's not, we're not getting guaranteed, it's, that work guaranteed back without expenses.
No, but it's accounted for. It's planned for. It's in the figures that I'm giving you. It's not going to all of a sudden come up and say, okay, you know, we got to come up with another whatever amount of money to cover that work. That work has been planned for and it has been budgeted for.
All right.
But it's coming out. It is coming out of the project.
Yeah, right. So in other words, we're going to front it and seek recovery.
I don't know. You know, I can't speak to the recovery part of it. I just want you to understand, right now, that in my opinion, just my opinion, that $5 million plus dollar figure feels very solid to me, and if anything, I would hope that it might potentially grow a little bit. That's just my opinion. So
I realize this is all expenditure, right? Now, the $46 million we got from the state, that portion of the whatever, does that come out of the 190 so that actually it's... Total expenditure of $190 million would be $46 million less.
On the city's part, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And
so we didn't spend $190. Okay, no. We spent it, but...
No, we did. We got $46 million.
Yeah.
$46 million from the state. In addition to that, we got the $15 million low interest loan. And of that $46 million, the state is... they hold back... Is it 5%? 5% until the project's completed and they've had an opportunity to review everything. But you're right. It's Ruth Ann, did you want to say something?
The only thing I wanted to say was in response to Alderman Rice's question, when we put the five-year plan together this past November, we knew that we would not be borrowing that additional $4 million. So that's no longer in our five-year financial forecast. Where we will stand to benefit as a city is for everything beyond that $4 million that we save, we will then end up, if we give it back to the state, we'll get a new debt service schedule for the $9.5 or $10 million that we end up keeping of that $11 million. So we'll see a reduction in our debt service to the tune of whatever we save over the $4 million. So, to answer kind of, whether or not we really get money back.
Okay.
Just see if I understand something. Like, it seems like we were caught in a terrible position in the sense that the state, the MSBA low interest rate loan, they'd only give you on the last $15 million. And by overestimating the costs, which you have to do, appropriately, but we overestimated it by $5 million, so therefore we can only get the low interest loan, not on the real last $15 million, but we only get it on the last $10 million or so, unfortunately. So by overestimating the Board of Aldermen contingency, which we normally think of as good, and these other items, which we normally think of as good, is saving money. In a weird way, we've also shot ourselves in the foot because we don't get the low-interest loan. So it seems like a funny...
The good news is that interest rates are so low.
Yeah. And it maybe doesn't matter.
A lot of money. So it's about a point and a half. We sold the last bonds at about 3.5%, and the low interest loan is at 2%. So at least we're only talking about a point and a half on the money instead of, you know, something that could have been much larger at some other point in time.
So, and the other thing is that even though it says, you know, Board of Aldermen contingency or whatever, that contingency still would have been in the project. It was after much, how do I put it?
Insistence?
Huh?
Negotiation.
After much pulling and tugging, it was separated out from what would have been, you know, it would have been in different places in the budget, in the board order, in order for us to have greater control. I mean, this whole board order, there's a lot of critics out there that continue to be, and they're smarter than I am, I know, but this board order, there was never ever a board order like this ever in the past, and probably not in the future, though we should think about doing something along these lines as we get into a project like Day if we want to have control. So that's something for you to think about. But in the past, there was never as many line items. And the reason that we did that is when the board first started to realize that this project was starting to get out of control, this was our way of trying to have as much oversight as possible. So that contingency would have been in there anyway, and it would have been in there for that amount of money because we would have been told that, you know, you really should have this. And this is the only reason why it was separated out. And I do think that it was helpful because people were not allowed to switch money between line items without justifying it. And the one thing that's been very interesting in on these Friday morning meetings that I've been going to for the last quarter century is I never realized how much, you know, project managers and architects and construction companies don't want to have to come back and explain these things. You know, they would do everything they possibly could to happen to, you know, to make transfers. And I hope that it had an effect anyway. The other thing I just wanted to mention, and I hope they're working on this. I had asked them for it. And again, I'm not trying to defend anything. I just want people to have information, and they can draw whatever conclusions they want. But the other thing that will get you information is on how much did the A word, which is asbestos, along with other hazardous materials, add to the cost of this project and to the taxpayers of the city of Newton? And a conservative number at this point would be $16 million. That's a conservative number. And the majority of that was unanticipated. Okay? And I never said it before, but I was of the belief at a certain point in the project that we were going to get this into the 180s, which was kind of like a moral victory, as opposed to having to say something in the 190s. And even that, unfortunately, did not happen because of the additional money in phase two and how much extra money, you know, we had to pay for all the asbestos and the mastic that would show up on the walls and stuff that had to be, you know, that had to be shipped out in the boxes that were coming out. And it was, and so it's at least $16 million. But we'll get you we'll get you a breakdown on that. And the other thing just to keep in mind, and it's something I think that we should be very proud of, is no other city has a career and technical vocation program that we have. Everybody else, they're mandated to provide it, so what they end up doing is they pay tuition to, like, what is it, Lexington, Minuteman. So they pay, you know, tuition to send the kids there, and of course the kids have to go there, whereas we have that program here in-house, which is not only a benefit to those kids, but if anybody's had a kid go to the high school, I'm sure your kid took, you know, like my kid took culinary arts, even though he was whatever, you know. And so it's great that we don't have to send kids that want to major in that program off-site, that we can keep them there. But, you know, there was a substantial cost to the building because we had to obviously build the space and all the equipment that went along with it, and that was several million dollars. So, anyway, that's information for you to have. I'll try to firm up the numbers for those last two points. I think it's just important for you to have it. Then we'll, as I say, work towards this final accounting in June and the report that's going to go back to the state. And that's really, you know, that'll be the end of it as far as what information that we need to have. So are there any other... I think David did a great job of summarizing the different board orders, how we got to the point that we got to, and you know, where we stand today, what's been spent, what we're on the hook for, and what we can anticipate the project coming in at. All right? Anything you want to add? Is there anything you want to mention about, you gave us a report, I think it's probably, I'm going to head down to zoning and planning, we got Riverside, but maybe you could spend just a couple of minutes just bringing people up to date on the healthcare funds, and I think, I didn't see in your memo what you had mentioned to me on the phone about, it's the good news may be, maybe not as good as it appears on paper because of some initial savings that we've had with people and maybe their deductibles or whatever. I don't know.
Maureen can talk more about that, but I think you want to talk about it.
Well, actually, if you'd like, 2 weeks from now, if you want to put it on your agenda, I'd be more than happy to prepare something for you and give you, you know, really give you a good sense of where we are at this point, what the contracts have meant, where we think we're going for the rest of the year and into next year's budget.
But weren't you mentioning to me that, I mean, there were some pretty hefty increases in our savings in these accounts.
And as a result of the deductibles that went into effect. But then we were talking the other morning in the finance group, that doesn't reflect anything with the teachers. So we'll have the experience with the teachers and their deductibles taking place in the second 6 months of the year. So maybe...
Maybe it is all real.
Maybe it is okay.
Okay.
But it looks very good for the moment.
Right.
And Lauren probably wants to talk about holiday.
Yeah, bring in
holiday.
Okay, so then why don't we, you know, maybe just get a brief update on that at the next meeting. Okay, is there anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you all for your perfect attendance. I appreciate it. Hopefully that'll continue. And we'll adjourn. Thanks. Thank you.